It is Monday, January 15th, 5:30 p.m. Happy MLK Day, everybody. Talking about practice, we'll start momentarily. So before it does, we want to shout out our sponsors as always. Talking About Practice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Peter Tichichin. In association with Baywood Real Estate, a local real estate firm established in 1962, Peter Tichichin of Baywood Real Estate and Baywood Real Estate are happy to support community radio and can be reached at 680-1900 or at chicohomes.com. Also made possible by Blue Peace House in Chico. Looking for accommodations for friends or family? The Blue Peace House is a quiet, peaceful home in the heart of Chico that sleeps up to six. The Blue Peace House has stocked a kitchen, or their kitchen, with basic supplies, coffee, tea, spices, a redwood deck, gas grill, and herb and veggie gardens. More information is available at Blue Peace House on Facebook, Airbnb Chico, or by calling Steve over at 588-3549. So thank you to our sponsors. Like I mentioned, Talking About Practice is up next. So let's go ahead and start that.
We talking about practice. Not a game. We talking about practice. It's easy to sum it up when you just talk about practice. I mean, listen, we talking about practice. I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice. We're talking about practice, man.
Yes, indeed. We are talking about practice. Jarrell Gilbert in, alongside John Newberry, affectionately known as Noobs. What's happening, John? Good, man. Hold on. I need to pop you up. My bad. Also, filling in for Derek Isumaki, who's back home in Los Angeles. John Lucan. John, what's good, man?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me back.
Yes, sir. So let's do this. Divisional round is over, so we're going to get to all that. First and foremost, happy Martin Luther King Day, everybody. Hopefully, many of you had the day off and got to reflect and maybe do something positive for the world today. But let's get into sports. Divisional round is over. The Pack beat the boys. The Falcons fly high in the Battle of the Birds. Try to make that as corny as possible. Pats cover a 16.5-point spread, which was to be expected. Warriors and Cleveland are playing tonight, and they're playing right now, as a matter of fact. And I take a stand for Foot Locker employees everywhere against Travis Kelce. So we'll get into that in a little bit, too. But first, let's start with that game last night. We had a good one. Oh, well, depends on your definition of good.
I feel like defense.
Yeah.
Depends on what fan you were.
Yeah.
I just want to, for 1 second, just bask in the glory that is Alex Smith lost to field goals. That's it, really. I hate field goals, and I hate the way Alex Smith plays. So it was perfect. My buddy, his dad is from Pittsburgh. Shout out to Hackney. His pops is from Pittsburgh, huge Steelers fan. And so by default, my buddy's a Niners fan, but, you know, his second team would be the Steelers. He's texting me. He's like, man, if the Steelers don't start converting, we could be in trouble. And I said, yeah, except Alex Smith is on the other side. And, you know, to be fair to the Chiefs, they almost were. They almost had come back all the way.
Yeah, I mean, they were a 2-point conversion away from sending it to overtime, so.
A holding call.
Right.
Sure, yeah. So I wanted to start there. I found that game interesting, but not in the sense that it was super exciting. It was at the end there. I forgot who it was, number 72, whoever he is.
On Fisher.
Fisher, yeah. Yep. Got caught with the hold on Harrison. And it seems, if you go back and look at it, James Harrison wasn't going to make a play on the ball anyway. I mean, you never know. Maybe Alex Smith holds on to the ball a little bit longer if things change. Who knows? But it did seem that at that point, James Harrison had run too deep in the pocket and ran past Alex Smith when the hold had really occurred. And obviously, Alex Smith converted the two-point conversion, but it got called back, and then they couldn't convert, and that was your game. So I thought the end was interesting. I thought the entire game was sloppy for the most part. I mean, I thought the Chiefs did a great job of using Tyreek Hill as a decoy. That seemed to be the only plays that they hit. But I wanted to ask you guys, what were your impressions from the game? We have a matchup now in the championship game, but before we get to that, just what did you take away? Maybe starting with you, Noobs.
I kind of was expecting this one, a little bit more of a low-scoring game. A lot of these playoff games have been up in the 50s, even 60s. But this one, obviously, getting moved back to 5 o'clock our time, 8 o'clock on the East Coast, 7 o'clock KC time.
Yeah.
Because of the ice storm. I thought that was a good decision by the NFL, for the safety of the fans getting there and everything. But as far as the game goes, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, I think the Steelers were in the red zone, what, 5 times?
Yeah.
Came away. Overall, they only scored 6 field goals.
Yeah.
So couldn't punch it in. But this is just kind of one of those quintessential, like, Andy Reid, Alex Smith games where they just can't, like, they don't have enough explosiveness. You know, they were able to come down and get to the point where they had an opportunity to tie. But, you know, I feel like either one of these teams, believe it or not, actually would have had a chance to go in New England and play well.
Sure.
You know, you had said earlier that, you expected New England to cover over Houston.
I did.
But
it was close for a minute.
I mean, every time I looked at it, Brady was getting picked up off the ground or picking himself off the ground. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but, I mean, New England's offensive line, you know, granted it was Texans.
Sure.
But still, I just feel like Pittsburgh's got a shot in this game. Pittsburgh's got a dynamic offense.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what the weather's going to be like in Foxborough on Sunday.
Sure.
But I love what the Steelers got going on right now. The Steelers were actually my preseason pick the last 2 years. So from that perspective, I was kind of hoping for them to win.
Mm-hmm.
I got a good friend, though, from Iowa who's a huge Chiefs fan.
Oh, brutal.
And I know he was heartened last night, so I feel bad for Joe. Shout out to Joe if you're listening.
But I'm sorry, Joe.
You know, it's a classic game. It was the best game of both weekends.
Better than
The Packers Cowboys game was amazing with the 3 field goals in the last minute and a half. That was good, but I feel like I don't know. Like, I feel like KC or Pittsburgh actually has a legitimate chance to win it all.
Okay.
Where, like, I love Aaron Rodgers, like, as the player.
Sure.
And I believe that they can get it done in Atlanta, but I feel like the best team to lose yesterday was Kansas City, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No, that
we've
makes
actually,
sense.
Like, lost a real legitimate championship contender, in my opinion.
Sure.
I just don't trust Green Bay's defense to get it done
against
Atlanta or potentially New England.
Yeah, Green Bay can't really hold on to a lead. You saw it last night with 28 to 10 at one point.
21-3 and then 28-10, I think.
Come all the way back. In regards to Pittsburgh and Chiefs, it was a little bit of a bummer to see that holding call at the end there.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on it, you kind of see Fisher. I mean, it's a clear, blatant hold. But
sure.
I feel like in that situation, I don't know how you make that call. You know,
it's
the proverbial thing in sports is let them play. You know, and that didn't decide a victory, but they did in a sense. You know, if they would have let that play go on, I mean, there's so many times where in regular season you see certain plays. You know, he's 10 yards away from the play, so you're going to not call that or whatever it may be.
Exactly.
And you see that go into overtime, we could have seen maybe a different outcome, maybe the same outcome, but just more of a defined victory, you know, in the sense for Pittsburgh. You know, I think Dennis Green said it the best, you know, is they are who we thought they were, you know, in this game. You know, a good offense and a really good defense. So the 6 field goals doesn't necessarily surprise me when you're talking about Kansas City's defense. But
they've been good all year.
But Kansas City's offense is really always their Achilles heel.
How brutal for, like, just deflating, I guess, is the best way to put it. If you are a member of that Kansas City defense, and you hold this dynamic. I think you used the word dynamic to describe that offense of Pittsburgh. They are dynamic. I mean, possibly the best running back in the game, one or two, however you want to put it. Possibly the best wide receiver in the game, a top five quarterback in the game. And, you know, to bend and not break that way and to continue to hold them to field goals and to still lose that game has got to be brutal for Eric Berry and the rest. I mean, that's just a tough way to go out. We'll get back to this game, but there's a lot that happened this weekend, so I don't want to stay there too long. I do want to say I did want to see Alex Smith do well. I like Alex Smith, the guy. We rode with him for long enough as Niners fans. It's just his style of play. He is clutch, but his style of play is just, it's hard to watch. And I thought about what if we had Kansas City and Houston advance. I couldn't even watch that championship game. Brock Osweiler and Alex Smith dueling it out at 3 yards at a time. That would have just been worse. So
in a 2-3 game.
Yeah, I think we have the best teams left. Let's switch over to the NFC because that Green Bay Dallas game was an instant classic. There's a whole lot of things to talk about here. I thought that Dak Prescott looked like a rookie in the first half and then shook that rookiness off in the second half and really came out and just balled.
I'm glad they didn't make a rash decision down 21-3.
What's funny though
is you knew Cowboys fans were
there
thinking that. 21-9, they were thinking, where's Romo at?
No, I'm sure there was a large contingent of Cowboys fans, maybe even Jerry Jones himself.
I was about to say,
how many more points do they go down before he makes that
exactly.
phone call?
Exactly. I really wish I could get him.
Jason Garrett's got a beeper that just goes off direct line to Jerry Jones.
I wanted to know how close Jerry Jones got to picking up that phone.
That red phone.
Exactly, the bat phone, right?
It's probably silver or blue.
I mean, looking at stats here, 24 for 38 for 300 yards for a rookie, three TDs.
He threw
an interception, but I'm pretty sure that interception was a tip ball.
It was,
For a rookie, that's a great game. I mean, that's something to build on. It sucks that they went out in the way it did, but I mean, for Dak Prescott, you're definitely stoked to see performance from him.
I saw Stephen A. Smith calling the Cowboys an embarrassment on Instagram or something, which is just...
He's as reactionary as our next president.
Right.
You know what I mean? Knee-jerk reactions.
I have respect for what the guy's accomplished. I don't have a whole lot of love for that type of analyst or, you know,
journalism.
Yeah. Just the whole debate culture I find exhausting, because I really don't think there's a whole lot of blame to assign. I think if you're a Cowboys fan, sure, you're disappointed today, but I mean, you lost as time ran off the clock, you lost to the best, quarterback in the game right now, I would say. And the play he had to make, you know, and the play he made before he made that pass to Cook on the sidelines where he got sacked and held on to the ball.
And did not fumble that ball. How did you not fumble that ball?
That's insane. And then the pass interference call that was a bit iffy because he overthrew his guy by about 15 yards. And the Cowboys basically wrapped that game up if they call that – or if they don't – if the refs don't make that call, I should say. I don't know. I don't know that there's a whole lot of blame to assign. If anything, I thought Jason Garrett called a weird game because in the first half, I don't know if you guys noticed, but I saw that, and I think it was called out on the telecast, the Green Bay kept loading up, not against the run, but in the pass, the defense kept coming out in nickel, basically protecting against the pass. And when you have an MVP candidate and Zeke Elliott, I was just surprised that they didn't unleash him a little bit more, let that offensive line do what they do, because for all that offensive line does and they get credit for, they're not the best pass blocking offensive line, run blocking line by far. But I think there's a couple teams a little bit better than the Cowboys. Actually, in fact, I know they ran a stat yesterday. I can't remember those teams off top. But I was just surprised that he didn't run it a little bit more. And the clock management at the end of the game, I don't know if you guys remember, but Dak, he spiked the ball when they had I think 47. They had plenty of time and a timeout in their back pocket.
Right.
And everyone was up to the line, obviously, if they spiked it. I was kind of surprised to see that. I thought you could kind of try and catch Green Bay off guard there. And I don't know how much of that is on necessarily the coach there or if that's on Dak, but I thought maybe that's where you take a shot. You run up to the line, right. You know, and you could take a shot deep, and then you're forcing Aaron Rodgers with 35 seconds or however long to go the length of the field, because most your top 15 quarterbacks, you give them 35 seconds, they could get you 40 yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way the rules are lined up, you could just throw it up there one time.
Especially with two timeouts, I think.
Two timeouts, yeah, you could get 40 yards. So I was just surprised that the play calling at the end wasn't a bit more aggressive. But at the same time, I just don't think there's a whole lot of blame to go around here. I thought that was a great game. And, you know,
To your point, though, about Jason Garrett, I feel like a lot of times coaches kind of outsmart themselves. They try and get too cute.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And they don't stick to the bread and butter that's got them there all season. You know, and they just assume, okay, they're going to stack up, and so we're going to actually try and sling it a little bit more than they're comfortable with. And, you know, I think it's one of those things where maybe they just got down, you know, in the second quarter there by 18 points and, you know, maybe started chasing a little bit. But I love the fact that they were able to come back with 15 unanswered in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
That was really impressive. I think if you're a Cowboys fan, and I know that we have quite a few up here in the North State, you've got to be looking towards the future with your health, you know, your head held high, that they're going to be good for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I would say, though, is from a coaching perspective, like, I don't know if Garrett's the guy. Obviously, Jerry Jones seems to have a lot of confidence in him.
Loves him. Yeah.
Maybe that's because he does exactly what he's told to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so he, you know, there's not going to be that kind of clash of egos like he had when he had Bill Parcells in there, you know, in the early part of last decade.
Sure.
So we'll see. But I mean, you got to love the future if you're a Cowboys fan. You know, Dez getting two touchdowns, Witten getting two touchdowns. Like, you still have those old workhorses plus the two rookies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That offensive line, like you pointed out, is fantastic. If they can get a couple more pieces on the defensive side of the ball.
Exactly.
And not be giving up 34 points.
Right.
You know? But, I mean, you look at this.
Yeah, Sean Lee can't do it all.
No. Right. And, I mean, Sean Lee's only played, what, two of the last four seasons.
Right,
so,
yep.
Absolutely. I mean, if they get a couple pieces, like you said, Noobs, I think they are definitely off to the races. And they can be a contender from here for the foreseeable future, you know? Obviously, a lot of things have to go right, but we'll see. I mean,
but this isn't the type of organization that's not going to pay these guys after their rookie contracts are up. Like, Jerry Jones will put down money.
Yeah.
You know, if Zeke and Dak are both still healthy in 4 or 5 years or whatever, they're gonna get paid. You know what I mean? And the shelf life of running backs isn't what it used to be. But at the same time, you know, if he stays healthy, if everybody stays healthy, which is a big, you know, caveat. But, you know, you got to look at them as one of the premier teams in the NFC. I feel like Seattle's kind of on the way down. I think, oh, by the way, I can never look at Russell Wilson the same way.
he looks like a
dolphin trainer. And I told my buddy that, and he's like, "What do you mean?" And we were watching the game, and I just said, "Just look at him." And then he just started cracking up because it's so true.
Accurate.
I can just see him with a little fish in his hands, just like making those squeaking noises.
The wetsuit that's like a tank top
absolutely.
Wetsuit.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
No,
doesn't have any sleeves on it.
I can never look at him the same.
No, it's great. I mean, it is. So spot on. I think we'll definitely do a show this summer when we have some downtime. Just what dudes in sports look like.
Right.
A lot of dudes tweet in to Dan Levitard's show with suggestions, and I have some of my own. So we definitely, when we have a slow day in sports, we should hit a lot of those because some of them are just so perfect. But I did want to talk just a little about Aaron Rodgers on just his greatness. Like, we talked about it last week, and it's just been insane what he's doing. I mean, he's putting the entire team on his back. He didn't have his best receiver in the game yesterday. Didn't seem to matter too much. I mean, Devontae Adams, Kian Fahey on Twitter has done a great job of, he put together this highlight package. Devontae Adams should have like 30 touchdowns this season, and he's dropped in the end zone like maybe 5 or 6 of them. It's insane. I mean, he's making these guys better. And the passes he makes, some of the plays he makes, some of his escapability, and just he manages the game to a level that I think very few, Peyton Manning comes to mind, Tom Brady, obviously, mm-hmm. but very few get to that level. And it's just insane what he's doing. And so, yeah, I look forward to this Atlanta Green Bay game.
The over-under is 61.
That's awesome. Right,
it's going to be. It has to be a shootout. I mean, Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers at the helm with those
in a dome. You know,
yeah,
exactly.
So, the last game at the Georgia Dome too. They only built that thing 20 years ago. Like that's what we're doing now. We're just tearing.
It's only 20 years old.
Like 20
that
years
new
old.
Stadium though makes me forget about the Georgia Dome. Right. All the games that have been in that looks, dome.
Yeah,
that
and the new Braves stadium are on their third gorgeous. Stadium in like 25 years.
That's silly.
Yeah,
you take a page out of the Packers book and just remodel the old one.
Yeah, I still hate that Levi's Stadium is a thing. I haven't been there, and I don't know that I'll go anytime soon.
I just don't like the fact that it's so far outside of San Francisco.
Right, they should change their name
to Santa Clara 49ers.
Yeah, they 100% should because it's just ever since they moved, it's. Just has kind of ruined my childhood, and I cry almost every day over it. But anyway, and Aaron Rodgers should have been the starting quarterback for that team, but that's neither here nor there. I actually want to go down this road real quick. I really don't like that. Why do we need brand new stadiums all the time? Why can't we just revamp the old ones? Because there's something to be said about you went to the same stadium that your dad took you to, that his grandfather took, you know, and like, it's no longer generational like that. And I know for myself personally, obviously the Niners moved to Santa Clara. The Giants moved out of Candlestick some years ago to what
but
most...
But at least it's downtown.
It's downtown San Francisco, right? Yeah. They moved more in the city, if anything. The Niners moved out. The Warriors are moving in a couple of years to San Francisco, which I'm really mixed about because going to Warriors games when I was a kid... It was a whole different crowd. It was a bunch of like old school Oaktown players.
Right.
You know, it didn't have this whole like dorky element of the Silicon Valley. And I'm cool with it to an extent, but once it goes to San Francisco, it's going to be so just hoity-toity, yuppie city. And it's already becoming that, but there's still an element as you're like, if you catch the BART, you're walking through like by the Coliseum, it's still Oakland, you know? And I think when they lose, when the Warriors no longer have that, it's just going to lose some of the culture to me, you know?
And the
Niners moving for me, I've kind of lost interest. I'm still a Niners fan, but...
And they're going to price out like a lot of casual fans too.
Exactly.
A lot of like hardcore fans that have been there for a long time going to the O, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Going to the Coliseum. It's like, you know, and now you look at the situation with maybe, you know, Mark Davis moving the Raiders to Vegas potentially.
Right.
I mean, you have a situation where Oakland might not have a single team.
Exactly.
Which would really be unfortunate. I mean, granted, they're still going to be the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
And they're going to represent basically, you know. And that's another thing that's interesting is like they're the only team in sports that doesn't have a proper name. And I don't mean proper as in right or wrong, but I mean like nobody else is called like the Sunshine State Dolphins.
I was just thinking about that.
Or, you know what I mean? It's either Arizona or Phoenix or whatever it is. It's an actual city or state. They're the only ones.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. But I mean, people are still going to, obviously, it's not like people in Oakland are going to stop rooting for the Warriors. But at the same time, to your point, like there's going to be that kind of like original like fan base that's just not going to be able to afford to go to the San Francisco games.
Right.
And it's going to be a whole different crowd in there. And it's going to be, like you said, a little bit more hoity-toity, a little bit more money.
Highfalutin. And it's like, gross.
And I think that like it kind of takes away from the experience a little bit because some of the more like lower income people are the ones that like get into it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right. They're there to see the game, not to be seen at the game.
Exactly. Okay. That's exactly it. It's completely changed where I remember I used to go sit courtside for $150, like, you know.
Yeah,
the old Baron Davis days.
Yeah, not too long ago. And my buddy Renee and his wife Marie, they took their three kids to go see a game not too long ago. $1,500 when all was said and done with parking tickets. And they weren't sitting like, you know, three rows back. They were sitting, you know, lower section, but, you know, not the best seats in the world. Right. $1,500. And I just don't understand. I mean, you lose so much of the culture, so much of the diehard fans. And Oracle, they still talk about it being the best fans in the world. It is not. I'm telling you, I've gone to games when we had the Baron Davis era, even before that, when we were terrible for years and years and years. But when we had Baron Davis, Steven Jackson, and we were relevant again, and it's not the same. It was so much louder. It was so much aggressive. And the fans, for the most part, in my opinion, or at least from my observations, were more knowledgeable of the game because they follow the sport. They watch, you know, almost every game. They're involved. A lot of with these stadiums expanding and growing and becoming, you know, pricing a lot of the casual fans out, what you're getting is, you know, a business outing, you know, and it's right. Just not the same experience. It's not the same crowd. So, you know, but that's what sports is. It's big business, and it's becoming more and more apparent. They really, I mean, shouts to my teacher, my mentor, Dick Stein. He once told me, I asked him who he rooted for, because he's a big sports fan, and he told me he doesn't have a team he roots for. I was like, why is that? And he said, teams aren't going to be loyal to me. Why should I be loyal to them?
Right.
And I thought about that. I'm like, yeah, never once has a team considered what the average fan wants or cares about. And in many cases, they probably shouldn't. But when it comes to ticket prices and moving stadiums and things like that, it's just the greed of it all just kind of makes me sad and depressed. And it's MLK Day, so let's get off it. Let's be happy and move forward and progress here. Let's talk about the Pats. Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, watching that game, it wound up being a 34-16 game, but honestly, it didn't feel to me like that much of a blowout. They kind of stretched it out there in the fourth quarter. But, you know, I didn't like the fact that every time, you know, they cut to Brady, he was getting helped up off the field, or he was picking, you know what I mean? He was getting hit like every single play, whether it was Clowney, whatever. Like, they were bringing pressure, and there was a couple plays there. I mean, you know, he threw a couple picks, and, you know, if Houston had any kind of semblance of an offense, that would have been a lot scarier of a game, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and that's why and Pittsburgh, to me, is a frightening, you know, frightening team to come in there next week.
Yeah, it was. It was, what, 14-3 or 14-0 right off the get-go,
yep.
And you look right at the beginning, you're like, okay, this is going to be a blowout.
Right.
And I think the Texans defense exposed the Patriots a little bit, you know, kind of give a blueprint for Steelers, kind of what to do. You know, you disguise a lot of things and you just blitz. When in doubt, blitz. Because Tom Brady is like a Rodgers. You give him time, you give him a couple seconds, 2-3 seconds, he's going to find he's going to find some check down, his first, his second, he's going to go through it and find it. So you really have to get to him, frustrate him. I mean, you looked at him, he kind of reminded me a little bit of LeBron. Sometimes you look, the camera would pan to him, and he's looking at refs every single time for calls, or he's not used to being on the ground so much, you know. And I feel like that's how you get to the Patriots a little bit more, you know. A second half, they kind of did a little better of stopping Clowney and the rush. But when, you know, when it's all said and done, I think, I mean, you look at last year with the Broncos run, that's how, you know, they kind of took over the Patriots and kind of dominated them in that sense, you know. It's just, you know, hitting Tom Brady constantly, you know, making him make quick decisions.
Same with the Giants too in the two Super Bowls. I mean, just getting that pressure off the edge, you know, because he's not like Aaron. He's, you know, Aaron, if the pocket breaks down, he steps up in it really nicely, up and then out, can make plays with his feet, where Brady is just not that mobile of a guy. You know what I mean? And so if he doesn't have a lot of time, it's going to be tough for him to find those guys. I mean, they do throw a lot of short routes, so it's not like he has to hold on to the ball that long. But it is one of those things where if you get pressure up in his face, he's not going to be able to escape out. You know what I mean? And so that is definitely a liability for them. I love the fact, though, that they just seem to plug in guys. You know what I mean? White pretty much had missed almost the entire season.
Yep.
You know, comes in and gets, like, you know, three scores, including that kickoff return, which is, you know, like, at that point, I
Deion,
like,
Lewis, you mean?
I'm sorry, yeah, Lewis.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry, did I say White? I'm sorry, my bad. And he comes in, gets that return, and it's 14-3. You're thinking, here comes the blowout.
Right.
But then they fumble the next kick return, and all of a sudden, you know, Houston's in it. As far as Osweiler, I don't really know what the deal is with it. He made some really horrible throws.
Ugh.
You know what I mean? They paid him so much money.
$72 million.
That is something that Houston's going to have to go back and look at in the offseason, because if they can just put together some kind of offense, and granted, we don't know what J.J. Watt's future holds for him, but that defense without him, I mean, he only played
like
three or four games this year, and they looked phenomenal.
They're still the number one overall defense this year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I know that there's questions about Bill O'Brien's future, but I guess, you know, the owner has given him a vote of confidence. So, you know, granted, yeah, they're 9-7, not looking that great, but if they just had some kind of offense. I mean, they're kind of like that with the Chiefs. You know, two phenomenal defenses.
Yeah.
But just when it comes down to it, they just can't make enough plays on offense to get it done.
Yeah, and the Chiefs, like, or similar to the Chiefs, they have pieces around them. Tyreek Hill, Jeremy Maclin, he's not what he once was, but he's still pretty good option. Who knows what Jamal Charles' future is going to hold, but Kendrick West has been pretty decent for them. Mm-hmm. So they have, and, you know, Travis Kelce, who we'll get to later. they have some pieces around them. And
Houston, too. I mean, Hopkins is like a top five receiver.
Yeah. Who? Where was he? I mean, right. He was a top five last year. I think he had the most yards last year with Brian Hoyer throwing to him.
Well, Houston started like five quarterbacks last year or something crazy.
Yeah.
Didn't they? I mean, they had... Speaking of which, a bunch of injuries.
All right. I don't think it'll happen, but it would be awesome to see Tony Romo behind that.
That's a good fit for them.
Oh, God. It would be great. It would be great. I just don't know that Jerry Jones would be...
Just a couple hours away.
And lose the state of Texas. Like, because the Houstons, if they had a quarterback, I would put them immediately, you know, among top two, three teams in the league.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't count that out, though. That's a really good... prediction. I mean, you think about AFC, NFC, you know, it's, you know, Romo for him, it's, I don't feel like he might want to stay in the AFC to see, you know, the Cowboys in the playoffs or, you know, only if he gets to a bowl.
It's not like him going to Philadelphia or something like
right,
that.
Exactly. So. He's not going to go in division and his next best plot, you know, I mean, does he have family? I mean, how long has he been in Dallas? Obviously, he doesn't want to maybe uproot. Houston, he could stay in Dallas
years.
And play in Houston.
He could live in Dallas and just catch his private flight to practices every day.
Not going to lose the fan base in Texas. Like, you know, they still like to refer to themselves as America's team, which I have a issue with.
Who ever said that? Because...
Well, that's just them, like their own self-promotion. Right. But I mean, for a long time, they were. I mean, you look at the dominance that they had in the 70s, you know. But I mean, you know, they're definitely one of those franchises up there with Pittsburgh, you know, that's kind of like has a national following for sure.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, throughout the South, there's not another team. You go through Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. You don't hit another pro team until Georgia. Mm-hmm. And then if you go west, you don't hit another team until L.A.
Right.
And for a while, 20 years, there wasn't a team in L.A. Or Arizona, excuse me.
Denver.
Yeah, Phoenix.
Arizona,
exactly.
Yeah,
but that's a pretty like large swath.
Right.
And then you go up through Oklahoma and the Kansas, Nebraska.
Yep, exactly.
Like there's a lot of territory there where they could – you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where people would like be like, well, what's the closest team? Oh, Dallas. Or what's the best team? So they definitely have that national following, and especially with that history that they've had. But I like Romo for Houston. I think that like puts him, like you said, up into the upper echelon of teams because that is someone that's going to get the ball to Hopkins. And I don't know what Lamar Miller's status is, but he's a pretty decent running back. And that defense, I don't think that they're going to fall off.
No, I definitely think that if – if they can solve that one riddle, they're right there in contention. This is FM 90.1 KZFR, broadcasting live and direct from Chico, California, to the foothills, to the Sacramento Valley, and beyond. Talking about practice right now, we're just discussing potential landing spots for Romo, and we're discussing Houston here. And yeah, I mean, that would be really cool to see. I don't know. I think that's going to be – I actually kind of look forward to – what's going to happen with him this offseason. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk about potential landing spots for him. I know Denver has been mentioned. It's going to be because he's owed a lot of money. He's a $25 million cap hit, I believe. So there's going to be a lot of things that need to be figured out. And like we just mentioned, Houston's already paying their starting quarterback $72 million over the next